Blog Talk Radio.
Night in that familiar slap in the face. Well, actually, the news beacon, that's going to be our new tone, I believe our first guest is on the line. Let's see.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Lou. How are you?
Oh, fine, James. I hope you had a good week.
Well, very interesting. I don't know if Janet had told you about the little incident that happened to me on the way to L.A. I'm actually in downtown L.A. at my brother's recording studio, so I'm hoping that these are noise-canceling earphones. We
I'm
had a very interesting... Okay, I hear you, Jenna.
Okay.
We actually had a little incident on the train coming from San Diego to L.A. Where they had to stop the train because of a passenger. At first, of course, all the usual rumors, ICE is coming, this, that, and the other. But it turned out to be a homeless gentleman that was basically just trying to get from San Diego to L.A. I guess instead of riding the rails, he decided to try Amtrak. It was interesting because, this wasn't part of the brownie invasion or, somebody trying to slip across the border. This was just an unfortunate human being. Down on his luck, be it by circumstance or, to our beloved administration, these people are all mentally ill. I didn't really get a chance to talk to him to find out whether or not that was so. This is just a problem that's indicative of our country right now. And it really needs to be addressed by more than fences and, cutting back on social services and Medicaid. And, it's just a kind of a pitiful situation. And as I mentioned before, it seems to me now out here on the West Coast, there are more homeless women than I've seen in a lot of places. Fortunately or unfortunately, however the case may be, this was not a young lady, or a homeless lady. But either way, whatever the gender, it's something that needs to be addressed. Janet, you want to comment on that first?
Yeah, I think, it's very sad to me that, all of this is going on, and it's going on all over the country, but probably more in Florida and certain parts of Texas and in California because of the weather and things like that. It's really sad. We weren't always great about it even before, but it's really gotten out of control in that you know, people are, I don't know, people are just, are so withdrawn, and they don't, they have absolutely zero compassion. And not everybody, but, you know, I'm talking about, like, for people that are homeless, and you never know what somebody's circumstance really is. And, you know, we, you know, some time ago, I mentioned that I had a company, a big company, a small company, but there used to be some homeless guys that used to hang around there. And, you know, people say, aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid? I'm like, no, I'm not afraid at all. I mean, these guys are actually protecting me. And they love Lou, because whenever they see Lou, you know, he always, you know, like, say, hey, you want to do this, you want to do that. He wasn't just handing out money. He'd say, you want to do this, you want to do that? And they would say, yeah, sure. And then one day when the guys got all cleaned up and stuff, we didn't even recognize him. And he really were actually nice guys. They were just down on their luck. And this happens, like, so often, and people have this bizarre, weird attitude about, like, ooh, you know, like, that's, you know, they're going to attack me or something. And, you know, it's sad, because I don't see anything in this. Oh, maybe things maybe start changing a little bit now, but I don't see any kind of compassion, you know, coming. I'm seeing more from the kids than I am from anybody else. Toward people in general, you know, just like what's going on? Like, what's going on? Like, what? You know, tonight, Lou and I saw this thing about this guy that the president had picked to handle a $6 billion budget for Native Americans, and the guy had only been a clerk in a hospital. He just filled out the registration paper. That was it. Well, he did get pounded on the head, so he withdrew. But we're thinking, like, wow, how, you know, this is how things get even worse than they already are. When you have so many incompetent people, whether it's real, whether it's intended or not, you know, who recommended this guy? But I feel, you know, in Miami, there's an area that what I used to do is take things, because I knew where they were. And then we take stuff down, right down to the homeless shelter, whether it was food or whether it was clothes or whatever it was, because then I knew they got it. You know, it wasn't like you give it to somebody and who knows, it winds up in Goodwill and they have to go buy it even at a very low rate. And what the heck, I'm donating it anyway. Let me just give it right to people directly and just say, here, guys, have a great time with this and I hope you can use it. And women, a lot of women. So, but it's sad, and I'm curious about one thing. When they came onto the train, did they come in like stormtroopers, or, you know, how, what was their attitude?
Well, that and I know this is going to sound somewhat prejudiced, but because, and this is just my feeling, maybe it would have been handled that way had it been anyone, but once they saw that this was a relatively young, shaven individual, I mean, he didn't really look, you know, like, you know, that, like, you know, he was derelict. He looked like, you know, he had been to a shelter maybe the night before, and he had this little bag that said personal belongings with him. And, you know, so he was treated rather cordially once they found him, you know, whereas in usual circumstances, they're not quite so gentle. As Trump pointed out, that you don't have to bend their heads when you put them in the cruiser. Well, you know, this gentleman was treated with a great amount of respect, and you know, it was kind of like, you know, it was a joke. I don't think it would have been handled if he had been an immigrant, or, you know, perhaps covered with tattoos, or,
right,
you know, perhaps, you know, like I said, dressed a little more slovenly.
Well, you know, Trump did threaten, just yesterday, the day before, I think, he threatened California with probably Jerry Brown would love, he threatened to pull ICE out of there. And he said, let MS-16 cut everybody up. MS-13, or, you know, cut everybody up. In that case, they're animals. So, you know, I was thinking to myself, boy, that would probably be music to Jerry Brown's ears, really, because, you know, nobody's really happy to see ICE. I don't think anybody, particularly the governor, I'm sure he's got, he probably has his own way to handle things that, I'm not so sure that ICE is so happy about going in there at some. But, and I don't even know how many MS-13 groups, people, whatever, gang, whatever you want to call them, are in California. I really don't have any idea. But I thought that was almost a funny threat, you know, because the way he did it was like, I'm not going to do this to California, and then they're going to kill everybody like animals and, you know, cut them up. I mean, it was
we're all huddled behind our doors with shotguns at night, and, you know, I make sure I push the couch in front of the door, and I think I have 6 attack dogs. No, I mean, Lou, you want to chime in on some of this ridiculousness?
This is the question. I'm sorry, James.
No, I was just saying, did you want to chime in on some of this? You know, Janet was talking about how he is talking about withdrawing ICE, and of course, San Diego and Los Angeles both are sanctuary cities. So, you know, as well as, I believe, San Francisco. So, you know, he's threatening to withdraw federal funds from California. But I don't know if they really,
I think you're correct, James, in telling us that if the guy had tattoos or looked a little bit strange like that, that he wouldn't have been treated with such respect, which is very refreshing to hear, especially when this Trump is such a maniac, and he's on such a desperate campaign to keep out immigrants and people who want to join family in the United States. I came across a television situation where it appeared that Trump is attacking, as an immigrant, people from MS-13, that terrorist gang that is threatening people around the country. As it turns out, that's not an immigrant genesis. It was born in, I think, Los Angeles, and it spread from there. This is an American gang threatening the country. It's not an immigrant problem. But Trump is painting the immigrants that want to come into this country, instead of like the women who want to join their family or their children or something like that, somebody who is desperate for refuge in a safe country instead of Central America, he wants to paint the immigrants as MS-13 members. that they're terrorists, they're gangsters. All they want to do is come in and loot the country and kill people. That's a new immigration policy and campaign to paint these immigrants who are facing deportation or maybe want to come into the country as thugs and gangsters and killers. So it's nice to see that ICE, some people in ICE, have a heart and they call in Jewish Rachmanis a little mercy, a little kindness and gentleness. So I think you're correct.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, and maybe I've missed the news. Maybe it was a segment that I missed. But let's see, Columbine, Pulse, Las Vegas. I don't recall any of these shooters being from MS-13.
Yeah, the guy in Texas church, the guy in South Carolina church.
The couple out here in California. I mean, people not realize this? Do people not see this? That there's no connection between any of these terrorist attacks and MS-13?
Well, it's interesting. I think it was on Chris Hayes. He had a segment on MS-13, and he showed where Trump wasn't just deified about how their people are living and cowering in fear in Suffolk County, New York. I know Suffolk County, New York, and I know a lot of people there, and I don't know anybody that's cowering. Trust me. Now, and then what he did, Chris, was he sent out, like, oh, I wish I could remember the name, he's really good. And he went amongst the people and stuff. He said, what it is, he said, if you really break it down, first of all, it starts off with poverty. And so people are in poverty and it's just, it just gets to be this desperation. They're not going into Macy's in the mall. They're in their own areas and they're stuck. I mean, they're frankly stuck. And it's like, it's just a vicious cycle. How do you get out of it when nobody wants to help? Nobody cares. I mean, you have to be afraid of every move you really make because, and in some cases, some of these guys actually do protect people. So it's of their own in their areas. But as far as like somebody, like the people cowering in Suffolk County, it'd be like, what? This is not the Suffolk County I'm familiar with. Because I don't know anybody cowering now. But it's just so bizarre that I have come to the conclusion that he's mentally ill to the degree that he just says whatever comes into his head. And just goes with it, and that's it, and that's facts. And you have any backup for that? Well, not exactly, but it's just still with everything that's happened in the last week or two, the hate is just stronger than anything, and. Even to the lock her up business again. I mean, she was like, oh, stop already. give me a break. And I think a lot of people, I think there's something like 67% of people are just not with this anymore. It's just like enough. And, we probably shouldn't go through this so quickly, but with the kids and everything now, I got to tell you something. I couldn't be more proud of these kids. You think that these kids are the future, and Washington's on life support.
Well, we're definitely going to get into that, I think Obama's words were very poignant. But there's a couple other things that seems to have just kind of completely slid under the radar, and I can understand why. But a couple of them happened, I believe, last week as we were on the show. And once again, we see the cold-heartedness of this administration toward people of color. I have friends that are down in Puerto Rico right now, trying to help boxers, their former heavyweight champions, and they're down there trying to help boxers. We have a couple there that are suffering from brain damage and whatnot, and they're going down there to make sure that he has, you know, the proper medical help that he needs. The village that he lives in, I believe, only has something like 25% electricity, and that was before the explosion. So, as this administration succeeded in sweeping Puerto Rico under the rug, when you look at, you know, and I mean, I am pointing fingers now because you look at the help that people in Florida have received. You look at the help people in Texas Louisiana have received. In fact, one NFL player received an award for how much money he raised for the hurricane victims.
J.J.
Watt, right. But no one has mentioned how these people in some of these outlying islands and Puerto Rico are still without power. Some of them are still without shelter. Some of them are still without fresh water.
I know, it's crazy. It's amazing. And it's actually, you know, I mean, of course we have Paul Ryan, but that in and of itself is an impeachable offense. Because it stated that the President of the United States shall not abandon any state or territory of the United States. And he definitely has abandoned Puerto Rico. There's no other way to put it. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you know, it doesn't take it. Einstein to see that. But of course, you know, with the Republican House, I mean, and with Paul Ryan there, I feel like there's this giant wall, and it doesn't matter, you know, when he said I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and nobody would arrest me, you know, or you know, we'd move the vote or whatever he said, you know, right at the moment, you know, with this Congress, I believe it. It's getting a little bit, starting to get a little bit different now. It's a little hotter in Washington these days. But, you know, it does feel that way because I was saying that to Lou last night. I said, you know, like with the whole, you know, even though I'm so disappointed in John Kelly, how can you be arguing with John Kelly about your security clearance when you're the son-in-law? You're not supposed to be working there anyway, period. Never mind security clearance. It's the whole nepotism rule that they put into effect after Kennedy, you know, like the whole family is in there. I mean, it's just nuts. And to be arguing, you're arguing with Kelly, it doesn't make any sense to them. Like, who enforces this stuff? I mean, and I would imagine it would be like Paul Ryan and that group, and you don't hear anything. I don't even know where he is. I think Paul Ryan's hiding under the desk someplace. I mean, it's just, unless he comes out to say something stupid, but it's, I just can't imagine any other president. And I mean, could you see Barack Obama, you know, having a relative, you know, working for, you know, with him in the White House? They didn't even like Michelle being there. You know, it's not that she worked in there, but, you know, her presence came in the West Wing. And you know, forget it. Hillary would have been elected, and she would have had had Chelsea working there and Chelsea's husband working there. My God, the roof would have blown off. So I said, you're arguing about your clearance when you're not even supposed to be here, period. You know, not in this area.
Without the security clearance, Kushner is kind of all the way over on the other side of the world. Lude, do you think the fact that there's an ocean in between, and you know, there are a lot of things that are, you know, kind of hidden in the ocean. Things can be forgotten. At one time, I don't think he didn't even know that he was president of some of our possessions. I guess he thought they were ruled by some imaginary guy from Oz. Should the president at least know, where he, the countries that he's responsible for? I mean, we already see that he doesn't care anything about the countries that he's responsible to.
Well, this president is very distinct and different from anybody I've ever seen. Fortunately, I've never seen or met anybody that had at least some empathy for other people. But I do believe that the only person that I could really state has no empathy for anybody or anything is just Trump. He's anti-everything. I don't think it's limited to people of color, the DACA people involved. I'm sure, or different ethnic backgrounds, or different race and color, he's anti-Muslim. He certainly is a racist,
but Biden is the best buddy. The Russians can do whatever they want, never him say a word. Not words.
Unfortunately, he's not the norm. He's not the average individual.
Thank God.
You have the white supremacists in the country.
But here's the thing, Lou. People. Knowledgeable people that we consider intellectuals, these are the people that we once looked to for guidance. Now it seems like there's a very distorted picture of endowment.
Mm-hmm.
You no longer want to see. For instance, how immigrants were embraced during the war years. I know that there were certain prejudices and whatnot, but during the patriotism, everyone, whether you were Irish or Polish or whatever, everyone went down and joined to protect America. Now we seem to have people out in the streets saying protect America, but they seem to have white sheets and a different agenda. Lou, how did we...
Which America are they talking about?
Well, this is what I want to ask Lou, because, Lou, is this the fault of our generation wanting to give too much to our grandkids?
Well, I don't think you can pick out any reason. I think that the issues we have today are directly related, and the problems directly related to this maniac Trump, who comes in with an agenda of hating everybody and everything. He is ruthless and arrogant and a liar, a pathological liar. He can't say with the truth. Who ever believe or think that this could be the president of the United States, the supposed leader of the world? I think that the issue now, which is presented to the American people about gun control and never again the students, I think this may hopefully be the turning point. But I've said that before. For some reason or other, no matter what the tragedy or event or catastrophe is that Trump is involving us with, like now he's going to raise his sanctions for North Korea. They're watching the Olympics. They're enjoying themselves. There's peace there. There's a North Korean leader that was a guest of the South Korean people. They may be trying to make amends. All of a sudden, Trump comes out and says that we're going to increase the sanctions against North Korea. He wants to disturb this tranquil peace that is brought about with the Olympics.
Well, he had a problem with them presenting a united Korean team.
Right.
So they, I mean, you know, when we have never, you know, this is another first that we've never had, other than when we boycotted on our own the Moscow Olympics. But we have never had a president that has voiced hate and discord among sports events. But like I said, because as a veteran, I have some issues with of course, this new gun legislation. But I want to talk about a couple examples here, because it seems just, when was it, last night, the governor of Missouri gets arrested on sexual harassment charges, and it was for taking pictures of a woman that he had an extramarital affair with, and threatened her with blackmail. He was arrested by the sheriff. We have someone in the Oval Office that has been paid off at least one porn star that we know of. We have a playmate, Bunny, that says that she had an affair with him. We still have, I believe it's still 12 women that are have him in court. Louis, as the number one law enforcement person in our country, why doesn't Jeff Sessions have our president in handcuffs?
For some reason, Trump's affairs, as outrageous as they are, and his lessons or instructions that with the female, you just have to grab her by her private parts, and he could have the whole thing. He gets away with this. For some reason, the guy was anointed. Unfortunately, apparently, all three of the women who were ready to testify against him, I believe their actions are barred by the statute of limitations. Or else,
yeah.
I do believe that they would at least be arresting him for some of his malicious intrusion on people and harassment and grabbing him and stuff like that, which he's admitted. I think, but how do you explain the fact that this governor,
he's admitted to being in the dressing room with young women underage.
Women, yeah. Teenage America or something.
Right.
15, 16, and they said they were really embarrassed because, you know, these are kids. They were 15 or whatever. And he'd just come walking in and he would just say, and these girls are grown up. So they said he would come in and he would say, it's okay that I'm in here because I own the
pageant.
The America thing. So they didn't know, and these kids were you know, like, I'm going to say terrified. They're mortified anyway. And didn't even know what to do, you know. Fortunately for him, it wasn't me. But, this is just how he is. What bothers me so much is that no matter what it is, nobody says anything, nobody gets mad, nobody goes crazy, nobody, where's your House of Representatives, where is this moral majority, where is this, you know, the values. I mean, you've got somebody like Billy Graham dying, you know, this week, and I knew somebody that actually knew him, Billy Graham, and said, you know, he was really quite a really nice guy. He's a really nice man, but his son Franklin Graham is standing steady with Trump, and I'm like, really? Because this is very interesting to me. Like, explain to me how that works. That you can, like, somebody like Al Franken, who, and my feeling is that Al Franken is a comedian. And when that business is goal happened, I think that girl knew what she was getting into. They're on a UFO tour. I mean, it just got completely blown out of proportion. And, you know, I'd probably get in trouble from women for this, but I blame Kristen Gillibrand a lot. So she started to push him and push him and push him to the point of resigning, which I think is really sad because I think he was one of the best senators that was there. But, you know, I guess maybe he still wanted to go through this whole nightmare. At the same time, he's got to be sitting at home thinking, God, you know, yeah, look, what did I do? I mean, I'm looking at the cameraman smiling, you know it's a joke. And all these guys are having affairs, and I mean, my God, the one I'm waiting that's probably going to finally take Trump out is Melania, because I think one more affair, and I think that's, he's going to become a hen, you know. She's going to become Lorena Bobbitt, because, she's too active, and
she's definitely kind of made her feelings known about the Stormy Daniels or whatever her name was, and this new playmate.
And now the thing with Stormy Daniels is, you know, I'm going to tell you something, and I'm not even an attorney, but I think I'm more of an attorney than his attorneys are, and Lou will probably say I might. I've learned everything pretty much from Lou, but when his attorney, Michael Cohen, made all those different LLCs and all these different Delaware corporations and everything to pay her off, and then it came out, everything came out, that was the end of their non-disclosure agreement. So now she can come out and tell everybody everything, and she's doing it. So I don't know whether it's going to mean anything because, you know, I've noticed one thing about the white evangelicals, they seem to be very forgiving and like, Jesus will forgive, you know, but, you know, you're not Jesus. And I'm not so sure about him forgiving so much. And yet, if it's somebody else, you know, you want to hang them from a tree. You want to tar and feather them. You know, I mean, it's a lock them up. You know, it's a lock them up. It's just crazy. It's crazy to me because I'm thinking, like, where is the outrage? When is the outrage going to really hit? Because how many things, I mean, this, it's not like it's, okay, was this one thing, or it's this one thing, or it's that one thing. It's everything. It's everything. You know, I mean, every facet of the government is screwed up. I mean, I just don't know a better way to put it. I don't know anything that's really running smoothly or right and isn't in the process of being destroyed, like the judges and everything that he's appointing. You know, I mean, it's just, it's just nuts. You know, I don't know. I mean, of course, if I were married to him, I would be a widow right now. But you know, and Melania looks like she could probably do that. But it's I don't know.
Well,
I mean, it's crazy. How much more?
Like
how much
said,
more?
Like they said, those looks to kill. I'm not sure that she wouldn't be charged with homicide after a couple of those walks of hers. But
Kevin MS-13 tests you on her. Yeah.
Lou, I do want to get the. I know the average layperson probably doesn't know what gerrymandering is or really the significance of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. One of the reasons why I'm a little familiar with it is because I moved out here from Pittsburgh, as everyone knows, and Pittsburgh is one of those districts that got redistricted, so to speak. Some of the southern, well, I guess it would be northern, eastern Pennsylvania, excuse me, especially around New Jersey, and there were redistricted. It seems that the GOP, that's why they call them the Grand Old Party, has had their way for decades in the Pennsylvania districting lines. Lou, and I know this may be, you know, sound kind of optimistic, but in a state where I believe the current ratio is 3 Democrats to 15 Republicans, with the redistricting of Pennsylvania, the Democrats have a chance to pick up 5 seats. Can you kind of explain what gerrymandering is and how it affects the voting population?
Well, gerrymandering is something that is an insult to our entire electoral process. The Constitution provides one man, one vote, and every vote seems to be counting, especially when you look at this last election, 2016, when Hillary can get the popular vote, but Trump gets the electoral vote. Voting never before counted as much as in the 2016 election. Apparently, this gerrymandering is pretty rampant in a lot of states with the GOP. And what we mean by that is that a party such as the Republicans comes up with this very devious method of trying to fix and make sure that they win an election. What they do is they curry people in a particular state like Pennsylvania, and they draw a map who's ever maybe in charge of a Republican governor. Maybe there's a particular house in the Pennsylvania government that's controlled by the GOP. They very tactfully would draw a map in which they would bring all of the supposed Democrats, the liberals, and put them into one particular location where their votes wouldn't really matter, while they maintain urban areas for the GOP people that may have voted in prior elections. So what they do by doing gerrymandering is really controlling the vote and making sure that their party has the votes necessary to win an election, just because of the way the map is drawn. Fortunately, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court saw this, and what happens when you say, like, you have 3 Democrats and 15 Republicans, a ratio like that, it was only because the map that was drawn favors the Republicans and keeps their vote intact, while it distributes areas to the Democrats where the total of votes don't mean that much. So it's a rude and terrible intrusion on the election process that enables the GOP primarily to control the vote and the elections. And that's why we see around the country the Republican governors have a majority. You've got a majority in the legislatures around the country. It's because of this gerrymandering, which I think is, at least in Pennsylvania, declared unlawful. And I think the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is going to redraw the map to make sure that one vote is meant to count for each person. So I think this is a refreshing change in our political system.
I think there's actually about 5 states that are doing that now, because they've all had lawsuits brought, and you know, I just think that the people, you know, are fed up with it, and whether it's the ACLU or who it is that's bringing the lawsuits, and they're getting some real traction, and it's starting to happen a lot. So to try to get things, you know, to where they should be, just be fair, you know, just be fair. But that's the whole redistricting thing, basically, you know. So it's although, you know, Pennsylvania can be, sometimes it can be pretty good, you know. You know, we hear some of the really good.
Mike is joining us again. But fortunately, tonight Nas isn't here. But Mike, how are you doing?
Doing good, sir. How are you all doing?
We're doing great. Mike, we were talking a little bit about this gerrymandering thing and the way it's seemingly been redrawn. Well, it has been redrawn in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, along with other states. What is your position on this?
Yeah, I think a lot of the misconceptions is that it's a one-way thing. Oftentimes people talk about the Republicans gerrymandering against Democrats, where it happens on the other side as well, depending on what state, like in Maryland or in California. I mean, if a Republican wins a seat in Maryland, I mean, they'll gerrymander him out of existence. You know, it's a well-known thing they do in some of the dark blue states. So both sides do the exact same thing. It just depends which party has the most power in a particular state is going to determine who's doing the gerrymandering, you know, so it's both ways.
I mean, like you said, I mean, it's been something. At one time, it was almost, I guess you wanted to call it a political reward. Your party won, then you were able to redraw the lines accordingly. Now, in a world that's supposed to be a little more fair, Micah, do you think that this administration may have run its course, considering all of the resignations and, you know, the redistricting and a lot of falsehoods that's been spread on both sides? But, well, anyway, let's stop there.
In regards to the Trump administration?
In regards to the Trump administration or the upcoming election, 2018?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think what has to be established is, have you ever seen any other presidency under this much constant heat and scrutiny from the media?
Have you ever had another president that deserved more other than maybe George W. Bush?
Yeah, but I mean, the question of whether or not he deserves it is a more of a question on understanding the factors that cause it, right? I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. You have Trump, who's an outsider figure, who comes in, who's not necessarily affiliated with either the Republicans or the Democrats, who doesn't have these deep sort of special interest ties that most politicians on both parties have. And so he comes in, right, but he comes in, and now he's challenging that. And what I find interesting is that you have a collusion, if you will, if you want to use the term, of the media and then the establishment on both sides working together against this guy. And people act like, oh, that's a bad thing. To me, it's an actual sign. It's a positive in his favor.
Hold on, Mike. I got to disagree with you here, because it was the media, especially Fox Media, that got him elected. So you can't have it both ways.
Oh, well, no. You got to know what happened in the election, man. The reason Trump helped get the Republican nominee was, this has to do with Hillary Clinton. It's called the Pied Piper theory, where she talked to people where she was connected to in the media, and they asked specifically to promote Donald Trump during the Republican primary, because the Clinton campaign knew she had really high unfavorables, and so she wanted the one person running on the Republican ticket that had lower, you know, more unfavorables than she did. The problem on her part is it's a calculation that didn't work out, because at the end of the day, you know, she wasn't able to connect with working class people in the Midwest the way Trump did, and it blew up in her face. Now, if you want to get into it,
that's not really true.
But the media changed, though, during the general election. Let's remember, after the Republican primary, once we got to the general election, when it became Trump against Clinton, the media was overwhelmingly against him, not just news media. You turn on all the late-night talk shows, all the celebrities in Hollywood. They were in unison against him once we got to the generals. You got to be honest about that, too. Come on now.
But he also lost the general election.
No, he didn't. He won. What are you talking about? He became president.
He won the electoral college. He did not win the general election.
Come on now, brother. That stuff little kids do when you play a game by a certain set of rules. One kid loses and he says, wait. If the rules were different, I would have won.
I'm not saying that he wasn't president, and I'm not saying that he wasn't elected president. I'm saying he did not. He's not the first president that did not win the general election.
No, but he did win the general because, okay, America's not a democracy. America's not a democracy in the way you're defining it. America is a federal republic. Okay, he won the popular vote on the state level.
He did not win the popular vote.
We
vote by almost 4 million people.
No. You didn't hear what I'm saying. I'm saying because we're a federal republic, our thing is based on the state level, not a federal sort of system. So he won the popular vote on the state levels in each individual state battle. That's what won him the election. For example, when he won Pennsylvania, he won Pennsylvania because he won the popular vote in the state of Pennsylvania. That's how our system works.
He did not win the popular vote in almost any state because what he did was he won the electoral vote because of the way the whole districting is. So,
ma'am, I'm sorry. With all due respect, that is incorrect.
So you're telling me that
in Pennsylvania, hold up, you're telling me that in a state like Pennsylvania, you're telling me Trump didn't get more votes in the state of Pennsylvania, yet he somehow won the state? That's not true, ma'am. Trump got more votes in. Okay, can you show me one state? Show me one state that Trump got more. That Hillary Clinton got more votes than Trump did, and yet the state went to Trump. Can you show me one state that happened?
Well, I can tell you right now that between Gary Johnson and Jill Stein,
he did not win the state of New York. New York went to Hillary Clinton. It was blue.
Jill Stein is under investigation now too because of what the Russians did with her and just pictures of her with Putin and Flynn. And by the way, let me tell you something.
Oh, come on now. The Russian collusion narrative is total BS, and everybody knows it.
What was Jill Stein doing in Moscow with sitting next to Vladimir Putin?
Go ahead, Mike.
You have actual pictures. You know those things that speak a thousand words. Of Jill Stein actually in the Kremlin with Putin. You have social media, which really helped elect Donald Trump, Facebook and Twitter, where you have actual indictments against not only individuals, but entities. So are you saying that the guy that this administration has appointed to oversee the executive form of the government, are you saying that all of these facts, these 32 indictments that he just came out with again yesterday against Manafort and the other guy, are you saying all of this is BS?
Yeah, if you just break it down real simple, let's go step by step. First and foremost, I believe the CEO of Facebook had come before a congressional committee to talk about the Russians, influence in social media, in particular in Facebook ads. And when specified how much and when, he detailed how the vast majority of it happened, the majority of their funding actually happened after the election, not before it. And initially they were doing ads in support of Trump. Yeah, but what happened? But pay attention. Okay, I want you to understand this point because you can look this up. Don't take my word for it. This is an actual testimony from the head of Facebook on the actual fact. So he said what ended up happening was initially there were ads in support of Trump, but as soon as the election was done, the vast majority of the funding went to anti-Trump ads, talking about impeachment, and they actually were starting rallies against Trump and trying to organize protests against him. So what we actually find is that the Russians weren't necessarily going and supporting one candidate. They were just trying to create political upheaval in the country in general, regardless of, because if you look at the indictment from Mueller, it actually details how the Russians were actually doing the same thing for Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primary. So a lot of people, because they don't actually read the details, they didn't read the CEO of Facebook testimony or listen to it. Again, you don't have to take my word for it. You can read the transcript of the Facebook CEO, or you can watch a video of his testimony, and you can see what they detail.
Mike, but I don't read, I read indictments.
The indictments have to do with the people who were connected to the social media ads and some of the Twitter, activity. But let's cut to the main point here. I just want to make one thing clear, and I think we all have to understand this. There's no indictment, or there's not even an accusation that we're talking about them going into the voting booths and changing votes from Clinton to Trump. The accusation is that they influenced the election by doing things like hacking the DNC servers and giving information to WikiLeaks, or, getting involved in social media. That's basically what we're talking about here. So what they're really saying is that the Russians somehow caused Americans to decide to vote for Trump instead of Clinton. Now, let's cut to the heart. That's basically saying that people aren't capable of making up their own minds based on the information they have. And at the end of the day, if the Russians did, in fact, hack the DNC emails, all they did was give the general public information that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to be. Because the DNC didn't deny any of the emails. They just were upset that they got hacked. They didn't say the emails weren't true.
11 days before the election, 11 days, Jim Comey came out and said he's reopening the email investigation with Hillary because some of the emails went on Anthony Weiner's laptop, which somehow held 625,000 emails, which I'd like to see a laptop that does that, and that maybe something's in it. And in that 11 days, I heard her. She was way ahead of him at that point.
Yeah, Comey had to do that. Comey was covering his ass when he did that. Because that information was available. Hold up.
He was Trump's best friend doing that.
Hold on. We're getting off the subject here because we're kind of digressing. And in these last 30 minutes, I really want to talk about what happened in Parkland and the causes and some of the actions that have taken place since. And Mike, I really want to get your view on this because, frankly, I want to understand. Being a veteran, I want to understand how you can possibly reconcile what this administration wants to do against things that have happened. So first, let's address bump stocks, okay? Bump stocks have only been employed in one terroristic shooting in the last 10 years. Bump stocks have been the NRA itself has come out against bump stocks. So this is nothing new on either side. Everyone, like I said, including the NRA, has come out against bump stocks. Number two, I understand the Second Amendment. But the Second Amendment was not meant, and I'm taking this as a soldier, it was not meant for you to use high-velocity rounds against animals, against other human beings, except in time of war. Now, the president himself has come out and said that he does not seek a ban against assault weapons. Mike, maybe you could tell me why. Hello?
Yeah.
I want you to kind of answer this for me first.
Yeah, okay. And banning them is agreeable with the NRA because it cuts into their profits. People would maybe use a bump stock instead of buying an automatic rifle, they could buy another type rifle where they could implement the bump stock. So the idea that
nobody's in favor of bump stock.
Excuse me, I got it. You know, like Lou, you can buy a kit from Man of War magazine, Soldier of Fortune magazine for about $39.95. And you can turn your AR-15 into fully automatic. So the availability of bump stocks is a convenience. And it's only, I mean, usually, unless someone is showing you how to use it, you know, it's more of a danger than it is an advantage. But, Mike, are you still there?
Well, frankly, I appreciate
it. Lou, we're trying to find out if Mike is still on the phone. Mike? Hello?
Yeah, well, I appreciate your input. Fortunately,
no, go ahead, Lou. Maybe we'll get Mike back on. No, I can't get him right now. I'm not sure. But go ahead, Lou. Lou?
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead. I can't get Mike right now.
I'm not familiar with rifles and guns. I can say it's fortunate or unfortunate, but while I do have weapons in the house, I've never shot a gun. So I appreciate your input. So in any event, coming up with the fact that Trump said he's for banning bump stocks, I mean, that's no concession. That doesn't meet the cries of these never again people. That's not a solution. Nor is his other solution about arming teachers, which would be the worst thing in the world for our education system. Let a teacher be a teacher. Let a guard be a guard. You can't mix. Incredibly, you have a teacher that is usually a conservative person, maybe middle class, they're not involved with weapons. And to put a gun in the hand of a person that's not accustomed to shooting guns or something like that can only bring more catastrophe. So the idea of advanced by Trump as a solution to the gun problem is ridiculous. It doesn't mean anything.
I got to say one thing. I had an email last night with this with my Brigadier General friend, and I was writing back and forth to him, and he was saying that, first of all, you know, any of these assault weapons, whether AR-15s or AK-47s and all those, don't even belong in anyone's hands that don't know how to really handle them. Not handle them just by going through target practice or something, you know, but somebody that maybe was in the military that has a full understanding, because this is not like picking up a .38 and just pulling the trigger on it, you know, that type of thing. And, like, for instance, he said, I shouldn't have one. He said, you can have a .38, but if you have an AR-15, don't talk to him. So, and like, for instance, our former son-in-law was at Black Hawk Down, and that was a terrible thing in Somalia. You know, he came back, he didn't even want any part of, you know, any kind of semi-automatic weapons or anything. He had, like, I had enough of this. But the thing is like, I have a sister that's a teacher. I was terrifying to even see a gun in her hand, any kind of a gun. But the thing is to say, we don't want to make, at least in my opinion, I wouldn't want to make our schools, schools are tough enough. I don't want to make our schools a prison, you know, where, and realistically, because you know, since you were in Vietnam, know, if some guy comes busting through with an AR-15, where is your gun going to be? And how, and there was a teacher here, just, you know, that in the area here, that said, no, he's a, kind of like he's in his 40s, mid-40s, kind of, you know, not a big guy, not a little guy, just like normal. And he said, I went to school to become an educator. I want to teach. What would I do? What would I do with a gun? Even if I learned how to use one, would I put it on a holster? Would I lock it in a desk if you don't want to leave a loaded gun and let a kid to get it? I mean, there's so many things that could go wrong as opposed to go right. It's just insane. There's just too many damn guns on the street, period. And, you know, when Clinton signed that Brady bill, and I think that banned the assault weapons bill, and then Bush didn't renew it. And then poor Obama was the entire time trying to get that thing renewed again or reenacted or whatever, and he couldn't get background checks. I mean, they weren't giving them. I mean, accuse those poor kids in Connecticut of being not real. I've even heard them accuse these kids down here in Florida of not being real, or that they're being their actors, which, oh my God, couldn't be further from the truth. Although these kids are going to be you know, but the thing is that we're just like that. This country has become obsessed with guns. Obsessed. I mean, it's just like if you talk to somebody and they say, you're not taking my guns away, they say, why? What are you doing with them? You know, I mean, no one's saying if you want to keep a gun in your house or whatever, or you're actually really a hunter. You know, I've known hunters, and in fact, our former son-in-law was a hunter. Trust me, he didn't take an AK-47 out to shoot a deer. Yeah, he went out with a rifle, a normal rifle. So, you know, and I didn't even like that, because I felt sorry for Bambi. But it was, you know, like the whole thing, the culture with this gun obsession is weird. It's weird, because how many people are really feel like they could even, and like a cop said to me one day, he said, if you ever have anything more than a .38 in your hand, you'll kill yourself. I mean, and he's probably right, because it takes training, it takes practice, you have to really know it, and there's a lot of people that just can never do it. And then, okay, you're in NOM, so you know what that's like, but if somebody just came charging in, you know, and you're a teacher of all things, I mean, you're probably dead before you ever got to your gun. I mean, realistically.
First of all,
why don't you take empty prisons and make them into prisons? You know,
let's think about this, okay? How many teachers are there in the United States? And then you're talking about arming a third of them? So, you know, how many more guns do you have out there, first of all?
Yeah, exactly.
How many more people do you have out there without the proper training? And then how many people do you have out there with that ego, you know, that this makes them the great and powerful one. So, you know, when you see the children, the kids, and I mean, once again, you know, and I got to accuse you of this again, Janet. I think you're looking at rose-colored glasses here. I think this president doesn't want to do anything about the real problem. He wants to put a Band-Aid on it or show that he did something, regardless of how ineffectual it was. And we are going to have to depend upon the next generation in order to make a full change.
A lot of these kids are 16 and 17, and around the entire country, and watch March 24th, and they all go marching out, all of them around the entire country. And they're saying the ones that can vote when they're 18 in this November, they're going to vote. And if you got anything to do with the NRA, you're out. They don't want to hear anything. That one kid took Rubio part and slice and dice him. He was great. And that kid, I love that kid. And Rubio would start to crumble a little bit, you know, finally. But then he would not answer the kid, and he said, are you going to take money from the NRA? And he wouldn't answer him. So obviously you're not going to answer him. You know what the answer is. But the thing is that these kids are, and again, I'm going back to what I always say, is I try and put myself back to, say, when I was, like, 25 and looked around and saw, like, who's running for this and who's running for that and whatever. And I do remember Vietnam. My brother joined the Navy, really, so he wouldn't go to Vietnam. And you know, the whole thing about the citizens and the lines and the demonstrations, whatever. But they actually wanted Vietnam to be over. And it took a long time, but you know, they finally did it. But the thing is that when these kids see how much, this is happening a lot. This is like 18 school shootings since January. How can that be? You know, it's crazy. We never had anything this bad. And so you make kids that are 17 that can vote in November, and if they can't vote this November, they're definitely voting in 2020. And they're saying to them, they're moving to Florida, they're moving to Florida legislature already. Or they got Scott, who I don't know, I'll believe it when I see it, because he's the keynote speaker at the NRA. But, you know, the thing is that, okay, you can raise the age to 21, but and a couple of other things. But the bottom line is that when these kids say
the other thing that excuse me I don't know how I could have forgotten this, because this to me is absolutely a joke, is that he wanted to open up more mental hospitals.
Yeah.
That was the other. It was bump stocks, more mental health, what was the other? But anyway, let's talk about this mental health thing. It was actually, I believe, now, you know, and I attribute a lot of things to George W. Bush, and I might be wrong, it might have been Bush Jr., but it was actually under a Republican administration that we all of a sudden saw no need for mental health facilities. We saw them being turned out in droves, just in New York City, from Bellevue and other institutions. So now that you've decimated this program, and you've already talked about being $1 trillion in debt, we have no infrastructure. Where are we going to get the money for these hospitals? We're already talking about cutting Medicaid, Medicare, other various social. Do we have some kind of magic pot somewhere?
No, we don't. And I think that what Trump does is I think he says what. You know, he doesn't say what you really want to hear anyway, but he says maybe partially what some of these people want to hear. And then figures, you know, after a little while, you know, things will calm down, which I don't believe they will. I'm trying to figure out who, I can't remember who I saw the other day that said, this feels different than the other ones. And I guess it's because these are kids that were old enough to understand. I mean, they're old enough to fight back. They're not, you know, they're not six-year-olds, which, you know, was a so tragic. I mean, this is unbelievable. And I did see Andrew Cuomo last night, and he was talking about there's like four states that have passed all these laws, and they're, you know, they're sharing, you know, databases and all that type of thing. So like he said, Cuomo, he said, but then if once somebody comes in from some other state that, you know, we don't know about, you know, if they're not caught, they're not caught. But, you know, do you really think that most of the students are really due to mental? I mean, I'm not saying this kid is obviously something really wrong with them, but do you really think that it's always a mental issue? Or how many homicides happen just because you're pissed? I mean, somebody gets into an argument, somebody gets into a fight, and somebody runs out and gets a gun out of their glove compartment and comes back in and shoots somebody. You know, because, I mean, Lou's familiar with that, and he's had plenty of clients like that. But it's, you know, like, how many people, and even domestic violence, I mean, how many people wind up shooting their wives or wives shooting their husbands? You know, it happens, like, so much. So even though it's the mass shootings that we really, you know, focus on, if we think about how many murders we have in the country every year, it's nuts. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. Now, I watched a kid the other night that I didn't know the statistics, but he said they had one mass shooting in Australia in 1999. They've never had another one. Because they passed the appropriate laws so that, you know, to stop that. And they and their schools are not like prisons. No, I mean, they're really
and they get to school. And that does not mean that they don't have gun owners in Australia. What it means is that they have the proper gun laws and they have the proper... In Japan, I believe you have to go through 2 years of training and plus instruction as well as a background check before you can even own a firearm. So
Israel, you have to be 20 years old.
I'm going to ask you a question that it might seem rather ridiculous to the layman, but being an attorney, Lou, weren't things a lot easier when only the gangsters and the police had guns?
That would be a nice result of what's happening today and
seriously, Lou, when you think about it, I mean, you know, think back to the days of organized crime, think back to the days after Vietnam when most of the guys, the bad guys were either returning veterans or guys that were trained in mayhem. I mean, you didn't have, you know, guys going around shooting up whole houses. You didn't have little kids getting slaughtered in the streets. I mean, am I being too morbid here, Lou?
You're right. I mean, I can remember as a little kid, it was really, I mean, you never used to hear anything like that happening, other than, you know, gangs, like, you know, like mob guys, and, you know, and cops. And that was it. But,
gangsters,
you know,
gangsters. They didn't kill families.
You're right. Actually, at one point, we had quite a few guns because we would represent somebody, and then he'd win the case, and then they have to actually return the gun. So they give Lou the gun back, and he said to the client, "This is your gun." He said, "I never want to see that thing again." And one day I went into a pawn shop with all these guns. And the gun was available. It was nuts. and said, I don't want to leave guns around. And, you know, I thought we got ripped off, but what did I know? You know? But it's true. I mean, we'll tell you, the old days kind of say, man, I don't want to ever see that gun again. But it was, but you're right, because it used to be, well, you never heard of some three-year-old, you know, accidentally getting hit through some crossfire. It was just like nuts. And you're right, that gangsters went after gangsters. They never went after their wives and their children and all that kind of stuff. It was just, you know, that little crazy thing in the 80s with the Cocaine Cowboys, you know, that was a little bizarre, but, you know, it kind of simmered down.
No, it was just an observation from, you know.
But no, now you're right, because now it's like this thing about having a gun is like a badge of honor. And, you know, I think if you know how to use one and use it properly, you know, you're really using it for defense, not for offense, and really using it for defense, then, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But I just don't see why anybody needs to have an AR-15 or an AK-47 in their house, you know, or in their car, working worse, you know. I don't get that. I don't get the obsession. I mean, I really don't. Does that make some people like more of a man? No.
You've
seen the bad side of it. You've seen the bad side of it. So, you know, I'm sure you don't like to see guns flying around. You know, I always say when people want these guns, and like the NRA people that are so crazy, I can't have something enlist in the service. They'll give you guns. They'll send you someplace. You can fire them. But guess what? Somebody's firing back at you. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, there were no children firing back. There were no children firing back at Columbine. There were no people firing back. Well, there actually were in some cases, I guess, at a few of these. But it just seems so reckless. The way that adults are treating our children, I don't know whether we have started to take life so trivially, there used to be a thing called leading by example. What example are we leading our kids? Those are kind of my final thoughts for the night. Lula, you want to give us your final thought, and then we'll let Janet close it out.
Okay. But looking at the issue at hand now, which is extremely timely, and has been put on the shelf for decades about these gun control, I think we only reached a point where we have two immovable forces. You have Trump, who is not going to disturb in any way the NRA's position. He's already publicly declared that the NRA gave him $22 million in his campaign, and I think I'm quoting him when I said that he told them, you were there for me, I'm going to be there for you. You're not going to get any relief of gun controls from Trump. On the other hand, you've got these young students who seem to be a rising immovable force, and they're not going to stop in their campaign to get adequate safety and protection for the students in school. And I think that this issue is not going to linger. It's going to be coming to a head because you're seeing the businesses pulling away from NRA. You see the public outcry and everything else. James, seem to be a little bit disturbed about the fact that adults may not be sensitive to the children's safety or protection issues. I think that most Americans are sensitive to that. Most Americans, I think it's 67%, want to stricter gun control laws. They want proper registration and verification, background, and everything else. But I think that eventually the NRA is going to be the loser. I think that these kids are a driving force. You have sports people now wearing caps and uniforms, vouching for the movement, never again. And I think this is an uprising among the youth that's going to lead our country into appropriate gun control laws, like perhaps in Australia. So I think that, unfortunately, from this terrible tragedy recently in a high school, there is going to be a break from a different kind here. A different kind that is going to be, I really think, revolution as to this issue. And I think it's going to be resolved against the NRA and Trump. And I hope that will be the outcome.
Well,
Janet, I want to make sure that we also mentioned before you make your last remarks that the largest domestic bank has decided that they no longer will be issuing NRA visas.
Right.
What do you think about this being the first American bank that's actually taking a stand against the NRA?
Well, I think it's great. I didn't realize it, so I read it today, that that bank, what they were doing, is if you belong to the NRA and you apply for their visa, they actually paid your whatever the fee is to belong to the NRA. They paid that for you. That was like a bonus thing. And, that was like a big deal. So for them to come out and do that, and now there's already been other businesses, I think it's Enterprise, Unicard is no longer being associated with the NRA. And I saw a whole huge thing about different companies that were somehow associated with them, which I didn't even know. But they're being published, which ones are and which ones aren't. And it's going to take its toll, I think. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that, there's going to be plenty of very, very wealthy nuts that will, donate money to the NRA. But the irony is, I always thought this was pretty funny, it's so crazy, that the NRA convention does not allow a firearm. So, in other words, you don't trust your own members to have a firearm? I mean, you're the ones advocating for firearms. You're the ones saying everybody should have all the guns they want. But if you come to the convention, leave them at home. And I was like, in other words, you don't trust the people that are carrying guns. Because what other reason would there be? It just kind of tells you, in a nutshell, what that means. It's just crazy.
This way you get to take one home with you.
Yeah, right.
So,
have a fight, yeah. And you know, it'd be like a Western movie or something. But you know, we've got it's been a crazy, it's been a crazy week. My gut feeling is that Bob Mueller is really going to town now. I can't think of the first time Mr. Gates. He pled guilty today, and he's going to be cooperating. And I was saying to Lou before that, that man's 45 years old. He's got a wife and a couple of kids, I think. And he's probably thinking, geez, I'm in jail the rest of my life today. I'm going. And where Manafort is, I think, 68. So even though I'm sure he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail, he could. So things are happening because they came down with even more indictments tonight on Manafort. And one judge is saying that they're going to revoke his bail because there's so many charges that it'll just leave the country. So I think that Mueller, you know, who I really like, and I'm glad we'll never have him as a prosecutor on the other side, is really boy, he really played his cards close to the vest, and I think that time is much closer than further for Mr. Trump to be starting to shake in his boots. And I think he is shaking in his boots already because as he sees these dominoes starting to fall, he knows where all the bodies are buried and they're going to come out. And like everybody around him, I mean, Michael Cohen, everybody's in front of Mueller and it's going to be, you know, he's going to be the only one left in there. So I'm hoping that happens sooner than later. Thing I'm afraid of is, and then I don't know, I have to leave that one up to Lou, but I don't know if somebody like Paul Ryan does nothing, then what happens? I'm not really sure about that. But it's been quite a week, that's for sure. We said it every week, but God, I hope it doesn't keep getting worse. But I don't know. It's interesting in a way to watch these kids rise up, so to speak. Because, you know, I just remember as a kid myself, and you know, we were very much we were never anti Vietnam like our soldiers. You know, we were pro American soldiers, but we were against the war because we felt the war was ridiculous. Like, what are we doing in this place? And we're still doing it. And think about these kids today that were part of this whole thing, and the kids all around the country. These kids have never—they've never been in the country when we're not at war with somebody.
This is what our economy has been based on for quite some time, and as Vietnam soldiers, we learned. The meaning of economics.
My father said that he said when things are bad, start a war.
Yeah, I mean that's the way it used to be. The one thing that I am looking forward to next week, if you're not able to get one of the kids on the line, I am going to be able to have the young fighter that got his DACA papers, a dreamer, under the Dreamer program under Obama. So if we can't get them, I would definitely have him on and he can tell us about the process that he had to go through because the young man actually had to miss out on the Olympics because he didn't have a green card. So he was able to turn professional, but can you imagine, being denied to fight for your country? On the like, we're just talking about now, the Olympic stage, and being denied. So a lot of these guys, they depend on these programs, and for some of them, it's a way out and to make a better life for their families. But thank you, guys, so much for coming on tonight. We have had a few little problems, like I said, but we still got the show done, and we look forward to talking to everyone next week. So good night, Janet and Lou, and I look forward to talking to you again next Friday night.
Okay. Well, have a good week and a safe week and all that stuff.
I'm up here in L.A. I'm gonna enjoy myself tomorrow night. I'll actually be covering the fights for my sports show, The Pugilist Corner. So it's good to kind of be back in the saddle and see some of the guys that I haven't seen for a while, and get our mind off of some of the other things that are happening off in the world. Just enjoy some sports, you know. So have a great night, everyone, and I'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Good night.
All right. Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Any time, fellas.